Hey, everybody, guess what? It's Saturday night. It's 10 o'clock. I think it might be Saturday Night Live time coming soon. My 94-year-old grandfather, who I've been helping out with recently down in Florida, informed me that maybe Saturday Night Live starts at 10 o'clock instead of 11:30 nowadays. He said they changed the time. I would know. He has cable and I don't. I tell him it's on YouTube whenever I want. But anyway. Taking care of relatives that are aging. Aging population kind of makes you think about all the problems we have and what we could be solving, but instead we're fighting this weird political battle against Vladimir Putin and the executive branch of our government right now. So the government shutdown, I always think it's going to be about a couple weeks. I think that right after the Super Bowl, the government will reopen and there will be some deal. What's that deal going to look like? It's weird because it's going to be a deal between congressional Republicans and congressional Democrats, and Trump's hardly going to be involved. And the reason why is because what he's doing, contributing to the shutdown, he needs a break because the hens are coming home to roost right now. What I mean by that is, we've got an investigation into a whole lot of dirty Russian money funding not only the Trump campaign, but the Republican Party. And there are going to be indictments coming around, and we've got a president that shouldn't be president, and everybody knows it. And even people who would normally defend him don't even defend him anymore. They just attack the supposed enemies, attack Democrats, attack the left, attack anything other than address the fact that you've got a president who accepts a buttload of Russian money and it affects his judgment and it's bad for America. And we've got to do something about it. You're not supposed to have a traitor in the presidency. That's not the way this country's supposed to work. It's amazing that the fabric of the nation is holding up so well, given the egregious acts of Vladimir Putin and his sneaky way. Sneaky Vlad. Instead of sneaky Diane, it's sneaky Vlad. Sneaky Vlad got his way into our executive branch with money. And he almost got all the sanctions removed right on off the bat. He almost got Flynn to do it. He almost pulled it off. But somehow our intelligence community was aware and awake enough to get legislation passed in Congress to keep an eye on this at least. And now we're in this weird situation where we need to indict a sitting president for a host of potential crimes. There are so many of them, I can't count them on one chalkboard. It would take like 17 Simpsons episodes, like that first run where they're showing Bart repeating a writing phrase on the board. There's like 30 boards worth of crimes that this guy's committed. How many conspiracies? How many obstruction of justice? You keep obstructing justice. You know what was funny about what happened with the Bannon testimony this week? What amazed me was Bannon went in and started calling back and forth to the White House, saying that the White House was telling him not to talk and that he can't talk about anything, which, by the way, is obstruction of justice. You don't have blanket executive privilege over all words that exist in the language. Like, you cannot do that to somebody. So Bannon knows this, and Bannon decided, hey, I'm going to like act this out and allow the president to commit obstruction of justice, and then I will just be on my way, and then I'll be interviewed by Mueller, and hopefully I have some leverage over my testimony with Mueller. It's a mess. I mean, people are dropping like flies. Dropping like flies. I don't know if flies drop that much anymore with global warming. They might even rise. But if the statement holds any merit, let me tell you that nobody wants to be associated with what's going on with Trump. I don't even know if Pence is going to survive this somehow. It's a disaster. But how do we deal with it? Like, normally you'd say the president has, some type of invisible force shield around him and can't be hit with any legal anything while he's president. That's BS. It's not true, but it's also BS. Like, it's both. And we need to do is push Congress to pass some legislation to say, hey, nobody's above the law. You can indict anyone. And if the president has been laundering money because he's a moron, then we've got to lock him up, because we can't just allow him to throw throw these little bars into the spokes of America all day long. We just had it, everybody, you know? So I love the women marching. I love everyone coming up and standing up for ourselves. We can do what I've been saying to do for the last year or so, I think, which is just ignore and disobey him at every, like, you know what he hates? Here's what Trump hates. He hates people not listening to him, and he hates people hiding stuff from him. Like, he is utterly freaking out about the investigation because Mueller is so good at having his team not leak information and having honesty and trust. Basically, Mueller has the loyalty from the FBI, the agents, the people working on his special counsel. He has the loyalty from them that Trump can only like imagine that people have for him. Like, people only do things for Trump because they're scared of him. People do things for the FBI and for this country because they value law and the morals that this country is built on. And the president, not only financially bankrupt, but is also clearly morally bankrupt, as you can see by him paying off strippers that he's been nailing while his wife has got, like, is breastfeeding to Barron at this point. This is disgusting. And I think that we all knew Trump was this. We didn't know how bad it was, but we're getting the picture. So why should we allow him to ruin our lives? You know? Like, do with the things he hates. Disobey him and hide things from him. Just say, and just do exactly the opposite of what he says. Like, there is no reason to listen to this man anymore. He's only giving us a clue as to what our enemies want, how our enemies want to destroy America, or at least try to. So what we can do is come up with better solutions to problems. I've been having, all my friends and acquaintances and everyone, I've got supporters of all sides. As soon as they're informed that there are better ways of handling things, better ways of solving problems, like, I got to talk Bitcoin for a minute here, because I'm going to tie Bitcoin into a lot of social issues. All right, digital currency. Digital currency, I am bullish. I am a bull filled with testosterone on Bitcoin, okay? And I'll tell you why. There's a finite number of these digital coins, and everybody's going to want a piece someday if they don't have a piece now, because it's going to be a way that we spend money online, and it's a fluctuating money. It's going to go up or down in value, but that's going to be a lot of the fun of it. But the reason why I'm super duper bullish on Bitcoin, and why I buy some, and now I think that by early February, it'll be over 20,000 again. I have reasons for that, and I'll explain them later. But I love Bitcoin because we're ready as a society. We are ready for wealth to be created digitally, and we're ready to spend it. And not only have, you know, the new adopters and the nerds and the people that you would normally say, you know, don't get along or you can't communicate with, the techie autistic people are the only ones that are doing this. That's not totally true right now. And even more important than that, there are starting to be big name places that accept Bitcoin. Supposedly you can go to Whole Foods and buy a gift card with Bitcoin and spend it just like you buy your groceries with. You're going to pay a small fee to run the transaction. But if you bought some Bitcoin when it was at 10,000 and now it's at 13,000, you just got an extra 30% essentially to spend on your groceries. Who cares about the transaction? And if you just keep money there and want to spend it, like, it's currency, and people are going to realize that. And so there's a whole backstory between this blockchain technology that runs the general ledger that all this stuff is built off of, and how we all check each other's transactions, and that's how it works. That's how it creates the stability and reliability. You know, there's a lot of this technical stuff you don't really need to care about. All you need to care about is that there's only really one main digital cryptocurrency that is accepted places, that people spend and they get product. And that only one right now is Bitcoin. There are other ones that are trying to unseat Bitcoin and trying to get other deals with credit card companies. There's one called Ripple that may be working with Amex that may do some damage in the future. But it still won't unseat Bitcoin because Bitcoin kind of won this initial battle of acceptance. And it's a default currency in many ways, like the US dollar is a default currency for the global market. So Bitcoin itself, if you have any faith that digital currency is the wave of the future, which of course it is, because we are creating wealth out of nothing, out of zero, out of zeros and ones. We're creating wealth out of zeros and ones and a hash and a long bunch of keys essentially. And we're allowing us to all believe that that wealth is money. And we're going to spend it back and forth. And that's really all that any currency is about when you think about it. So we've established over whatever the 7 or 8 years that Bitcoin has been around that people are willing to accept this and willing to transfer it like money and willing to play the market. And that means that only more and more and more and more people are going to start using it and more people are going to start accepting it. And that means if there's a finite number of them and everybody starts to want in, what's going to happen to the price of a Bitcoin? It's going to go up higher than Pauly Shore at a smoke-a-thon at Heavy D's funeral. Okay, that's how freaking high it's going to go because everybody's going to want it because it's going to be... when you buy Bitcoin, the way you do it now, you're like, all right, I want 10 bucks of Bitcoin. I want 50 bucks of Bitcoin. I want 100 bucks of Bitcoin. It's, you know, it's a super tiny small decimal that's well under 1% most of the time. It's like 0.009746, whatever. It's such small percentages. You pay a little fee. You're just buying this small fraction, and then all of a sudden you have some Bitcoin. It's all about what you want to put into the system and what you want to kind of ride in the system and see if it goes up or down and how you want to spend it. So everyone's kind of locked in at their own minimum and everyone can control it themselves. And I put in, I think I bought my first chunk of Bitcoin at least 2 months ago, probably. At least a month, probably 2 months ago. And I bought some more just a week ago, and I'm now on and ready to go, and I'm locked and loaded, and I'm ready to buy when it reaches certain points and everything, because I'm in it for the long haul. I'm in it forever now, and that happens to a lot of people, and it can't help. I can't speak more highly of what's going on. There will be ups and downs, and sure you're going to see crashes and spikes and everything, but the arching value of this thing, I can guarantee you, it's gonna be $50,000 to $100,000 of Bitcoin in the next 5 years, probably 3 years even. I want to give you a more conservative guess because I don't want to sound like a complete maniac, but I believe it because I understand how this works. So what's even a greater good here? Forget about just making everybody who's in the system wealthy. How about creating wealth out of this digital currency and distributing it to people as a part of a universal basic income philosophy on life, which is, hey, robots are taking everybody's jobs. We have these, which is good and bad. It's good in the sense that it does things more efficiently and effectively and reliably most of the time, and cheaper. I mean, it's cheaper when you're just running a robot that knows how to do the task. That's awesome. But it's putting people out of work, and we are empathetic to human beings, and we care about people working and people feeling somewhat fulfilled in life and working toward a greater good. So this structural change in what jobs are going to be available is going to happen. But assume that robots take over almost everything and there are hardly any jobs. Well, what are we all going to do? Are we all going to sit around and be poor because none of us can work? Or are the robots going to serve us? And we just have to find a way to agree that we are all kind of going to sit around and do nothing if we want to and be bums, but still have food and shelter and water and power and all the things that make us feel like first world kings, even if we're poor white trash. And I'll stop using that term because I've had complaints about me using that term. So if we are, if you are economically disadvantaged, you can still have an HDTV and an awesome smartphone and a dishwasher and a washing machine and all these things because robots have made them cheaper and more ubiquitous for everybody. So, but what about our currency situation? Are we going to continue to do these things like Social Security and Medicare where we're padding the wounds with government and funding it with T-bills and the Federal Reserve and all this nonsense? Well, we could. We're going to keep running higher and higher debts or we can create this shizzle out of crypto nizzle and spread it to every bizzle. And if we try that, I think it's actually a great idea. How about everybody gets a Bitcoin tomorrow? Like, everybody gets a Bitcoin a month. I know that's drastically going to actually reduce the price of Bitcoin, because all of a sudden there'd be a bunch of it free. And you'd have to add Bitcoin to the system, because I think there's only 21 billion possible, and like 70 or 80% of them are already mined. So actually, that does leave more than a couple hundred million. If you give 300 million people, do kids get a Bitcoin, or just adults? Do kids get half a Bitcoin? I don't know. That would encourage people to have a lot of kids, I'll tell you that. But let's just assume that we did something like that. Well, I know that it's going to have this skewy up and down and spike and crash, and nobody's really going to know what it's worth, but it's still going to be there. And people are going to use it at Whole Foods, because Whole Foods will figure out how to restrict the cashing in and out of this transaction so they don't get killed on currency exchange, and everybody will figure it out. And eventually it'll stabilize, and whatever value this cryptocurrency, you know, the US Bitcoin or whatever it is that we create and give to everybody, whatever it is, it might actually work. And it would have been, was wealth created out of an idea, out of a hash, out of a 010101. And how sick would that be if, like, we took over crypto and America became the wealthiest, the utmost, I mean, the world would just copy us, but America could take off and be the crypto leader and do this crazy, you know who's going to do this first? It's Canada. Canada is going to do this first. I will talk to Trudeau about this. JT, I'm giving you a call. Canada can do this quicker, and Canada would do this quicker. And Canada could be a great model for everyone. You know what, Trump? Because you suck, I'm going to talk to Canada to show the world how this is done. And then you can copy me if you're still in office, which you won't be. But maybe Pence will copy me. He's probably a reasonable guy. I don't think that's true, but maybe. Actually, you know, he sounds reasonable. You ever listen to Pence defend himself? He sounds like a totally reasonable person. I don't think his actions are ridiculous, but he sounds totally reasonable. And we'll take anybody over Trump at this point. So if you've learned anything on this podcast, buy Bitcoin, indict the president, and it'll be, by the way, I think the Patriots are losing to Jacksonville this week. I think Brady's got a broken finger. I think Brady had surgery, and I think he's not, if he's going to play tomorrow, today, probably when you listen to this, if he's going to play, I worry that he has going to like re-break, he's going to re-separate this finger in the middle of the game or something. Like he's not playing the whole game. And I think that's going to cause the Patriots to lose. He's going to admit more, you know, he is a human being that is susceptible to injury, and the fingers will get you. Yeah, bummer. All right, anyway, so you've learned three things. Don't bet on the Patriots tomorrow, especially with the points. And buy Bitcoin. You know, I think you can bet on the Patriots with Bitcoin. It's probably pretty damn easy. Most of those websites want to pay you out in Bitcoin. I've never actually done it, but I would if I cared. So, I don't know. That's about it for the Ken Berberman podcast today. But it's pretty amazing stuff. So, oh yeah, the government shutdown will happen after the Super Bowl's over. It'll restart after the Super Bowl. That's my prediction. So, Ken's Talk is out.